Erev Tov, everyone. Erev Tov. Hope everyone is staying safe and is healthy. This week's Parsha, Parshas Vayetze, is a Parsha that really has so many important themes to discuss. But what we've been doing so far this year has been focusing on the beginning of the Parsha. And I'd like to start with the first Pasuk of the Parsha, go to the second Pasuk of the Parsha that hopefully we'll be revisiting, an idea that we've discussed in the past in brief, but have an opportunity to really expand it. Parshas Vayetze begins, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva Vayelech Charan. That Yaakov leaves from Be'er Sheva and he goes to Charan. And obviously Rashi right away attacks, what's the purpose of this Pasuk? We find sometimes, you know, telling us that Avram went somewhere, but why does it say Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva? It doesn't often tell us where the person left from, where they're going to. Okay, I understand that Avram was going towards Eretz Canaan. He was going down to Mitzrayim. He was going up to Eretz Yisrael from Mitzrayim, right? And Yitzchak was going down towards Egypt. So I understand Vayelech Charan, that Yaakov is going to Charan. Why does it have to tell us where Yaakov Avinu leaves from? And Rashi quotes a famous idea from the Medrash, that lo haya tzarach lichtov ela vayelech Yaakov Charan, page 144 in the art scroll in the stone. It only had to tell us where Yaakov was going to. Lama hiskir yitziyasa, why does it tell us his leaving? Ela magit sheyitziyas tzadik min ha'makom osa roshim, that when a tzadik leaves a place, it creates a great impact. It creates it leaves an indelible imprint. That when a tzaddik is there, there's glory, there's a glow, there's a luster to the city. Yatza misham, but when the tzaddik leaves, pana hoda, pana ziva, pana hadara. And that's when all the glory leaves from somewhere, that's when all the brilliance leaves. You know, what's interesting though is, why doesn't it in fact then tell us about Avram, when Avram leaves? Why doesn't it say, Vayetze Avram? When Yitzchak leaves, from Be'er Sheva to go down to Egypt, why doesn't it say, Vayetze Yitzchak? Why only here by Yaakov Avinu does it say Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, teaching us this lesson that when a tzaddik leaves, it creates an imprint. It leaves an imprint. So there's a famous story that Rabbi Levi Yitzchak mi Berditchev, one of the early great Hasidic masters, the Heilige defender of the Jewish people, Zechus Yegen Aleinu, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak for 10 years was a Rav in the town of Zelichov. He was in the town of Zelichov, and he was there for 10 years, and he moved on eventually to Berditchev, the name by which he's known. But one of the misnagdim, one of his antagonists, one of his major enemies in the town of Zelichov, came to him and said, you know, after he left and came back for a visit, he says, you know, Rashi tells us that when a tzaddik leaves, the glory of the town leaves, the beauty of the town leaves, the luster. When you left, nothing changed. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak said to him, tell me, why does it only say it by Yaakov and not by Avram, not by Yitzchak? So the Misnagdim said, I don't know. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak says, I'll tell you why. Because where did Yaakov leave from? He left from Be'er Sheva. Who was in Be'er Sheva with Yaakov? You know who's in Be'er Sheva with Yaakov? Where did he leave from? He left from his parents' home, right? He left from the home of Yitzchak and Rivka. So the Torah tells us that when Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, it creates an imprint. Why? Because there were very righteous, holy people that were able to see the lack of the luster, that saw the loss of the shine and glory of the town. You have to be righteous to notice this. So he stuck it to the antagonist that, you know, the town did lose something, but you didn't notice it because you're not a righteous person. That was his way of admonishing him. But Rav Yerucham Warhaftig had a very different take. Rav Yerucham Warhaftig was a fascinating figure. His son is more famous than him. His son was Rabbi Zerach Warhaftig. Do you know the name Zerach Warhaftig? Zerach Warhaftig was one of the signers of the Israeli independence. He was a member of the religious party. He was a religious minister for many, many years. I mean, he was part of Ben-Gurion's government. I think he was in from the first to the ninth Knesset. Rabbi Zerach Warhaftig was in the Knesset. His father was a Talmud of Nevardak. His father was a Talmud of great Gedolim, was a Talmud of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and of Brisk. I mean, it was a Talmud, a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Eventually, he also made it to Eretz Yisrael, lived in Bnei Brak, and he wrote Svarim. So Rabbi Yeruchim Warhaf, the father of the great Knesset member, the great religious Zionist, so he has a little bit of a different take, a very interesting take. He says that, you know, we often learn this Rashi, that the Rashi is telling us what's the cause and what's the effect. The cause is the tzaddik leaving. The effect is when the tzaddik leaves the town, what happens? That's when the beauty of the town, the glory of the town, the shine of the town is lost. Rav Yeruchim Warhaftig, again, you know, who experienced the Holocaust in his lifetime. In fact, his son, Reb Zerach Warhaftig, was credited for getting the Mir Yeshiva to leave. That he knew the Rosh Yeshiva because his father and the Rosh Yeshiva knew each other. His father was a big Talmud Chacham, that his son actually got Sugihara, the diplomat from Japan, to give the Mir Yeshiva the visas by which they could escape to Shanghai. I mean, he was a very, very chash of a person. So Rabbi Yeruchim Warhaftig, who was a very great and perceptive individual, who lived through a lot in his lifetime, he said that we have it wrong, the cause and effect. The cause is not the tzaddik leaving, and the effect is that the glory of the town is lost. He says, the cause is when the glory of a town is gone, that's when a tzaddik knows it's time to leave. He says there's a deep lesson here. When you see a tzaddik leaving a town, when you see a righteous person leaving a town, it's a lesson for us, right? Meaning the first way of understanding Rashi is to understand what a tzaddik brings to a town, right? That there's so much to gain from being in the seviva and the environment of a tzaddik. And when the tzaddik leaves, these things are lost. Rabbi Yeruchim Warhaftig has a different way of looking at the Medrash. He says that when you see a tzaddik packing up his bags and leaving, just know that that's not a good sign. That's a sign that the glory of a town is leaving, that the greatness of a town, and the tzaddik perceives that. And who knows if this was a reflection on what he saw in his own lifetime. You know, who knows what he was thinking of when he shared this idea. But it's certainly something for us to pause and to reflect upon when we read Parshas, the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, which is the Parsha of Galus, right? Meaning, we know that Parshas Vayetze is unique. Not too many Parshas have this. In the whole Torah, there's just mamash a few that from the beginning of the Parsha to the end of the Parsha, there are no breaks in the whole Parsha. And we've learned this before. There's a famous approach of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz on this, that from the beginning of Vayetze to the end of Vayetze, you know, normally if you look in the Artscroll Chumash, in almost any other Parsha, you'll see like little breaks, right, between different sections, whether it's a whole line, whether it's a few spaces. I mean, you look just right before Vayetze, just look in Parshas Toldos, you turn to page 132, and you'll see the breaks that I'm talking about in the middle of a Parsha. Vayetze has no breaks. And why is that? Many say, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz and others, because Vayetze is the Parsha of Galus. It's Yaakov Avinu leaving the land of Israel at the beginning of the Parsha, and at the end of the Parsha, Yaakov Avinu is coming back to Eretz Yisrael. And it teaches us that when we're in Galus, we have to have a singular focus. We can't be led astray. We can't be distracted. We have to maintain focus when we go into Galus of what our values are, of what our identity is. And this idea brings me to the next pshat in the first pasuk, which I really want to spend the most time talking about. And that is Vayelech Harana. Yaakov leaves Beersheba and he goes to Haran. And Rashi says something very strange. Vayelech Haran, he goes to Haran. Yatzal Aleches L'Haran, he goes out. He left to go to Haran. Like, what's Rashi telling us? Again, Rashi normally is adding something to our understanding of a pasuk. The pasuk says Yaakov leaves Beersheba to go to Haran, and Rashi says to go to Haran, Yatzal Aleches L'Haran. He left to go to Haran. What does that mean? He left to go to Haran. Okay, that's what the pasuk tells us. What's Rashi adding? So to really understand the depth of the Rashi, we have to see another Rashi. We have to see a Rashi on the very next pasuk. The next pasuk tells us that Yaakov encountered this great place and he stays there the night because the sun had set, and he takes from the stones of the place, he puts them under his head. By the way, just an interesting pshat. How many stones were there, in fact? There are a lot of different pshatim. One Medrash Bereishis Rabba, Rabbi Nechemia, says there were three stones. What's the significance of three stones? Where do we find the concept of three stones? Three stones that everything rests on, the three pillars. Right? It's the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, that the world exists because of three things, right? Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. Torah study, service of God and prayer, and acts of loving kindness. And we know the Medrash says there was debate amongst the stones, which one the tzaddik should rest his head on. And the way many interpret it is that the debate that rages all the time, which mode of service of God is the most important? Is it Torah study? Is it prayer? Is it good deeds of kindness? And you know what the answer is? What happens? All the stones come into one, right? That the verse tells us that he takes stones, but yet when he gets up, he takes the stone. That the three stones miraculously became one, meaning to be a Jew, a sensitive and soulful individual, we need all three. There's no such thing as a Jew who doesn't learn Torah. There's no such thing as a Jew who doesn't pray. And there's no such thing as a Jew who doesn't do acts of loving kindness. But we know that he takes from the stones, he puts his head on it, Vayishkav v'makamahu, and he sleeps in that place. Rashi says he sleeps in that place. Why does it say b'makom hahu, in that place? Just say he sleeps in the place. What does it mean he slept in that place? Rashi says that place is lashon miyit. It's an exclusionary term, meaning that in that place he slept, but there was somewhere else he didn't sleep. Where didn't he sleep? He didn't sleep when he was at the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever for 14 years, because there he was studying Torah. Again, doesn't mean he never slept or maybe never lied down to go to sleep. Vayishkav, never had a good gishmak shluf. This was the good gishmak shluf, the first gishmak shluf he had in quite some time. But here we have the introduction to these mysterious 14 years. These mysterious 14 years that before Yaakov Avinu gets to Haran, he's delayed for 14 years. And we know that these 14 years are very significant. Why? Because we know Yaakov Avinu is sent by his parents. Why does he go to Haran in the first place, right? You look at the end of Chayisara. Why does Yaakov Avinu go to Haran in the first place? Why does he go? He goes to find a wife, right? He's sent by his father. He's commanded by his father. The mitzvah of Kibbutz of the Aim, go find a wife. So Yaakov Avinu is going to find a wife, but we know he does a lot more than just find a wife. He stays there for how long? How long does he stay in away from his father? So he works for 14 years for Leah and then Rachel. Then he's there another 6 years. And then the travel, 2 years till he comes back. He's away from his father 22 years. He's in Haran for 20 years. 20 years he's by Lavan. And you know what the Medrash says? Yaakov's punished. He shouldn't have been away so long. The 22 years that he was away from his father correspond to what 22 years later in Yaakov's life? Exactly, Lana. The 22 years that Yosef is away from his father. Yaakov is punished for the 22 years he's away from his father because he should have found the wife and done what? Go back. Why did he stay so long? He was sent to get a wife, right? So I understand those 22 years, but then there's another 14 years. He's not only away 22 years. He's away 36 years. But he's only punished for the 22 that he was by Lavan and that he tarried coming back. Why isn't he punished for the 14 years that he went to learn in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever? And in fact, this is one of the most famous, maybe this is the most famous teaching of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in his Sefer Emes LeYaakov, a beautiful, beautiful Sefer, Masuk Midrash, sweeter than honey, Rabbi Yaakov's Torah. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zatzal, he says, you know, like, what's this like? I don't understand. Let's say the parents send a kid to go to go do something for them, to go do a mitzvah, go to the store and get something for them and come back. And on the way, the son decides he's going to sit in the Beis Medrash for 5 hours. Like, that's a nice thing to learn Torah, but that's not when you're supposed to do it. So why is Yaakov Avinu going and learning for 14 years in Shem Ve'ever before going to do what his father sent him to do? His father sent him on a mitzvah, right? To go get a wife. So why is he taking so long? And furthermore, why is he learning in Shem Ve'ever? We know that the Gemara tells us, and the Rambam discusses this actually in Hilchas Avodas Kochavim, Yaakov Avinu had pretty good Rabbeim, right? Who were Yaakov Avinu's Rabbeim? He had his grandfather Avram. Remember, how old was Yaakov when Avram dies? He was about 15. So he learned from his grandfather, Avram Avinu. The Rambam writes that Yitzchak Avinu taught Yaakov. So now he learned from his grandfather, he learned from his father. Two pretty impressive people, right? Now, before he goes out to Haran, for 14 years he delays the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av Yavim. Your father says, go get a wife, go, I'm sending you on a mission. And you say, I'm going to stop in yeshiva for 14 years. What was this all about? So Zokt Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, in a very important Torah, a very important teaching that we have to study and we have to study and we have to study again, this teaching of Reb Yaakov. And in fact, this helps us understand an idea that the Gemara tells us, that these parshios of Yaakov Avinu and Galus are really meant to be studied a lot. And in fact, the greatest rabbis, some of the greatest Tanaim and Amoraim, whenever they had to deal with government officials, whenever they had issues that they had to deal with non-Jews, they would study these parshios. Like the beginning of Vayishlach, they would learn Yaakov's meeting Esav before they would go meet with non-Jewish government officials. Why? Because Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky explains that the Torah of Avram and Yitzchak was a pristine Torah. It was a Torah, you know, they had their chazals about the yeshiva of Avram, the yeshiva of Yitzchak, where they taught these people, right? Avram Avinu influenced so many. There were people who converted to monotheism because of Avram. But these were yeshivas where they taught faith, where they taught, you know, God's existence, appreciation of God. And these were very, very serious, intense places that were kol kulo Torah. Right? Whatever the teachings of God they had, the spiritual teachings of God, that's what they were sharing with people. It was discovery of God. But the Torah of the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver was a very different type of Torah. Why specifically Shem Ve'Aver? People make a mistake. Aver was not the son of Shem. He wasn't the grandson of Noach. Aver was a number of generations later. Why specifically Shem Ve'Aver? Because Shem Ve'Aver were two tzaddikim that lived through two of the worst generations in the early years of the world, right? What generation did Shem live through? He lived through the flood. And a great-grandchild, Aver, what generation did he live through? The not Sodom and Gomorrah, but the tower. The tower of, right? Migdal Bavel. So you had people living through, and again, we spoke about this in Parshas Noach, you had people living through a time of ridiculous, ridiculous moral insensitivity vis-a-vis sexuality and immorality in that sense. That was shame. Aver lived through a generation of incredible heresy and anti-God ideas, right? The you know, Lahavdil, our days, God delusions, whatever it is. You know, he was living through a time of incredible atheism and Rav Soloveitchik said communism and so, whatever, we're not going to get into, you know, it'll take us far afield. But they lived through two of the worst generations, challenges of desire, challenge of arrogance and intellect, and they made it through okay, both Shem and Aver. So you know what they taught in their yeshiva? They taught people how to get through galus. How to not only exist, but how to thrive in alien and hostile cultures and environments. So therefore, when Yaakov Avinu is being sent by his father to go to Haran, when he stops in yeshiva for 14 years, what is he doing there? He's not going against his father's request. You know what he's doing? He's actually fulfilling his father's request, because his father said, I want you to go to Haran to choose a wife. How can I go choose a wife if I'm going to go to the house of my uncle Lavan and I'm going to become totally, totally fishmated? If I'm going to be totally fedreid, I'm going to be totally, totally lost spiritually, right? How am I going to be able to choose a wife? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, you know what's more compared to? A father who sends his son, parents who send the son to go pick a lulav and an esrog for them, for sukkahs. So what does he do on the way to go to the lulav and esrog store? What does he do? He stops in a base medrash, but what does he stop in a base medrash to do? to learn the laws of what makes a good kosher esrog, what makes a good kosher lulav, to be able to fulfill the journey, the purpose for which a parent sent him. And that's exactly what Yaakov Avinu does. Yaakov Avinu, and that's why Rashi says, Vayelech Harani goes to Haran, Yatza Lelechis L'Haran, he went to go to Haran, meaning the stop in Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever was not a stopover just for the sake of getting a cheaper flight. It wasn't a stopover because Yaakov Avinu said, you know what, before I do what my father said, I just want to chill in Yeshiva for a little bit. You know, some people, it's like it's a break for them. But why does he go, meaning when Vayelech Harana, Yatza Lelechis L'Haran, he goes out to go to Haran, meaning when he stops at Shem Ve'ever, it's specifically a stop to be able to journey to Haran. And specifically Yaakov Avinu that has to learn this Torah from Shem Ve'ever. We don't hear of Avram learning this Torah. We don't hear of Yitzchak learning this Torah. Because Avram, once he comes into the land, he goes out for a short time, then comes back and stays. And he's really in control of his environment, by and large. Yitzchak isn't even allowed to leave the land. But Yaakov is the first one who goes out. And in fact, it doesn't end. The Mesorah, this tradition of teaching over the Torah's Hagalus, the Torah, the lessons, instructions, how a Jew survives in alien and hostile environments, doesn't end with Yaakov. In fact, Rashi says Yaakov taught it to one of his sons. Which son do you think he teaches it to? He teaches it to Yosef. He teaches it to Yosef. Rashi says in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, Perek Lamed Zayin Pasuk Gimel, Ben Zekunim Hulo, Yisrael loves Yosef, Mikol Banav Ki Ben Zekunim Lo. Rashi says, Unculus translates it, doesn't mean he was born when Yaakov was old. No, Binyamin was born when he was old. Tirgim Bar Chakim, Ben Zekunim, he was very wise. Everything that Yaakov learned from Shem Ve'ever, what did he do? Who did he give it to? He taught it to Yosef. And in fact, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky explains that's why the brothers were jealous of Yosef. The brothers were jealous of Yosef. Why? Because they saw Yosef was getting these special Torah lessons that they weren't getting. And they were upset. But why was Yaakov giving the lessons to Yosef? Because he knew he had a tradition from his father, from his grandfather, that the Jewish people were going to go into exile. And they were going to have a very tough time in exile. And Yaakov Avinu felt that of all the sons, who was the son that is going to lead all my descendants in exile? It's going to be Yosef. Yosef is the one that has to know Torah Sagalus. And in fact, Yosef goes to Egypt. Alone, without any support. The other brothers, they have each other. But Yosef goes alone, and that's why in many ways Yosef is considered the fourth Av. Just like there are four mothers, there are really four fathers. There's Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef. That's why Alpi Kabbalah Adam, right? Yosef is like one of the Avos. Yosef is one of the greats. Up there of one of the seven shepherds, along with the three... Right, you're correct. We're not going to get into it. He's the Yesod of it all. He's the synthesis. He brings it all together. That's the connection. Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. He's the Yesod that gives to Malchus. But why is Yosef on a different level than all of the other than the other brothers? Because he is like an Av in his own. Because he has to do it on his own. And that's why the two sons that were born to Yosef in Egypt, before Yaakov and everyone else come down, they are like Shvatim, Yaakov says. Menashe and Ephraim get a portion in the land just like any of the other sons of Yaakov, because Yosef has that elevated position. And that's why Yaakov has to teach Yosef the Torah's Hagalos. And this is why the Tanoim and Amorim, Rabbi Shua, Ben Levi, others, before they would go speak to the Roman officers, the Roman governors, some even have the Roman emperors, They would learn Yaakov Avinu dealing with Esav. They would learn the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach. How do you deal with these people? And when we go into Galus, we have to know the Torah of Yaakov Avinu, the Torah of Shem Ve'ever. And when we look in this Parsha, there are a number of lessons that I'd like to just point out, just very briefly, very brief lessons about what is Torah HaGalus. What does it mean to be a Jew in exile? So first, it's interesting because in the beginning of the Parsha, page 148 in the Art Scroll, Perek Chavtes, chapter 29, verse 4, We know that Yaakov Avinu comes to Haran. When he finally, after the vision with God, he comes to Haran. And he's by the well. And he sees shepherds are hanging out there. They're not doing anything. And how does he speak to these strangers? How does he speak to these idolatrous heathens, right? What does he say? Vayomer lehem Yaakov, achai, my brothers. Me'ayin atem, where are you from? Right? Yaakov Avinu, vayomer lehem, and he says to them, Hashalom lo, vayomer, he talks about what's going on with Lavan, and he says, why aren't you feeding your animals? And he says, what do you mean? We can't lift it up. So what does Yaakov do? He goes and he lifts it up and he on his own. Many Mefarshim point out that look how Yaakov Avinu speaks to these strangers. He says, Achai, my brothers. Are they Yaakov's brothers? They're anything but his brothers. These are idolatrous people. When Eliezer goes to the house of Besuel and Lavan, he goes there. Avram doesn't send them there because they're monotheistic. He sends them there because he knows that in my family, generally, they're good character traits that I want as part of the founders of my faith, right? But they're idolaters. Yaakov's going to Haran. These are idolatrous people. And yet, how does he refer to them? He says, Achai, my brothers, right? That when we go into Galus, you know, and this is something that has been born out of a difficult Jewish history. But when we go into Galus, we have to know that there is a sense of responsibility to the broader community. There's a sense of brotherhood that we're supposed to have, yes, with my fellow Americans. We have to view ourselves as members of the Gullus, right? And we have the responsibilities to be good citizens in the Gullus. We have to have, and that's why, even when there's shtiklach amongst others, when there might be deceptive and immoral, dishonest practices of others, of not following laws, whatever it is, look what happens in page 166, Perek Lamed Aleph, when Lavan chases Yaakov down, and he says, Perek Lamed Aleph, chapter 31, verse 36, Lamed Vav, Vayomer Lelavan, Yaakov says to Lavan, Ma Pishi, what's my sin? What did you do that you chased after me? That you came in to look at everything, to find out what's going on? Neged Achai V'Achecha, right? And again, even when he's yelling at Lavan, he uses this Lashon, right? Before my brothers and your brothers, meaning uses words of connection. What's going on? And he says, Zeh Esrim Shana, these 20 years that I was with you, I never took anything from you. If an animal of yours, when I was shepherding them, was torn apart, I didn't bring it to you. I ate it. I absorbed that loss. Whatever it was, Hayisi Bayoma Chalani Chorev Vekerach Balayla Vetidar Shnosi Meinoi, I was totally honest in everything that I did with you. And so, one contemporary Rosh Yeshiva, in the Haredi world, in the United States, says, when you look at these psukim, what does this teach us about Torah HaGalus? When a Jew is in Galus, how do we have to act? We have to be beyond reproach with our honesty and our integrity. And unfortunately, you know, the news this week, Adam shared with me some news this week, you know, whether it's a secret wedding with 7,000 people, like what? What a chil Hashem, what a desecration of God's name. Totally missing the point of what Torah HaGalus is about. As Jews in exile, we don't try and game systems. Granted, I understand where it's coming from. If you want to say historically, sociologically, you know, we've been part of societies that have beaten down the Jews so much that we've become, you know, at times deceptive. You know, at times we have a great distrust of governmental figures because in the past they've destroyed us. In the past they've, you know, they've tortured us and they've constantly haven't missed an opportunity to malign us and abuse us. But in America, is that where we are? That's not where we are. And so when we talk about the Torah HaGalus, there's a responsibility of achai, of understanding that we are fellow citizens in a country. We can't view them as the other. There's a responsibility of integrity and honesty. And don't forget what we said, I think, just last week. Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveh b'tztaka. The Navi tells us that redemption will come when we act justly. This isn't just. this isn't correct, what's going on, and how we have to be sure. But at the same time, even though that we view ourselves as fellow citizens, even though at the same time that we do everything with honesty and integrity, we also have to be we have to be honest to ourselves, and we have to have our own spiritual integrity. And where do we see that? When in fact, the very, very object that Yaakov and Lavan use as a symbol of their covenant, what is it? Do you remember what it is? It's a pile of rocks. It's a pile of rocks. Page 166, the bottom of that page. Vayomer Yaakov le'echov, liktu avon, vayikhu avon, vayasu gal, they made a pile. Vayochlu sham al agol. And Yaakov and his people, Lavan and his people, they eat by that pile of rocks. That pile of rocks is the testimony, Lavan says. Hagal hazeh, the next page, 168, Memches, this is testimony between me and between you, and that's why he called it Galed. But Lavan didn't call it Galed. Vayikro lelavan, yigarsa hadusa. Pasuk Mem Zayin, verse 47. Lavan called it yigarsa hadusa. Vayom v'Yaakov karalo Galed. It means the same thing. Yigar sahadusa and Galed mean the same thing. The pile of testimony. The witness of the pile, right? That this object is testifying to the treaty that we made. But why does the Torah go out of its way to tell us that Lavan and Yaakov have different names to refer to it by? And again, don't forget, this is the symbol of their covenant. This is their constitution that's going to make sure everyone treats each other nice. And Lavan calls it Yigar Sadusa, Yaakov calls it Galed. The Sfarno says, the Sfarno, one of the Italian Rishonim, right, who was very involved in Italian society. He was a scientist, he was a mathematician, the Sfarno, a fascinating figure, not studied enough. The Sfarno says, you know why Yaakov calls it Galed and Lavan calls it Yigar Sadusa? Because it's already a foreshadowing to Egypt. What's one of the things our sages tell us was a great merit for the Jewish people in Egypt? Shaloshinu es lashonim. They didn't change their language. Because speech is an expression of a person's soul. Right? It's an expression of what's inside. Yaakov refused to speak like a non-Jew. He didn't say Yigar Sadusa. He said Galed. You should know I have a Talmud who recently reached out to me. And we came to Springfield, we went on a little bit of a walk together. If he's going to be listening to this, I hope you don't mind him telling the story. And he said that, you know, Rebbe, before I started working, you know, you spoke to me about making sure, like when I'm going into the world of business, that I speak properly, that I never lower my speech to curse, God forbid, or to talk about inappropriate things around people. And he said, Rebbe, I just want you to know that it happens all the time at work, but it just happened not too long ago that, you know, he walked in. I mean, I guess, right, because I asked him, is he going into work? So he happened to have been there, and, you know, he walked in an area where two people were talking, and one said, oh, he's coming, let's stop. We can't talk about stuff like this around him, you know? And he knew what they were talking about inappropriate things, but they knew that he doesn't talk like that. And that's not what matters to him. And he wouldn't lower himself by speaking in such a way. And the Sfarno says, Shalosh Shina Lashono, that Yaakov Avinu here is teaching all of us that part of Torah Sagol is, yes, we refer to Achai, our fellow citizens. We're responsible. We have to be responsible citizens in whatever country we find ourselves. We have to act with integrity and with honesty in all our dealings. Absolutely, 100%. But at the same time, God forbid that we give up on our religious integrity, on our spiritual integrity. And again, what was this thing that they call different names? This was a symbol of their covenant together. This was a symbol of their working together and their peace together. But Yaakov says, no, I call it something else. And he was teaching us about how a Jew speaks, what a Jew speaks about. And I think that that's a very important thing, because again, it doesn't necessarily mean we have to speak Hebrew. It doesn't mean when we say Shaloshinu Es Lashonim, it doesn't mean that Dafka they spoke Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh. But it meant how we speak and what we speak about. And this is just a little bit of the Torah Hagolus from Yaakov Avinu. There's a little bit, just a smattering of things that we see in this parsha, teaching us that what Yaakov learned in the Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever, that going out into Golus doesn't mean vilifying the other. Doesn't mean, you know, they play tricks. Lavan plays tricks. You don't play tricks with them. Don't say, well, they're lying anyway, so I'm also going to lie. They're cheating, so I'm also going to cheat. No, we hold ourselves to a different standard. We're not influenced by the standards around. We follow what the Torah tells us is yasher, what the Torah is straight. And most of all, in terms of identity, in terms of a speech, which is that expression of that deepest identity, galed, lo shina shemo, lo shinul shano, that he doesn't change how he talks. And these are just a few things to think about. But when you read Parshas Vayetze, you read Parshas Vayishlach, also Vayishlach, think about what goes on in Vayishlach. And you read Parshas Vayeshev and Miketz and Vayigash, and you read all of these Parshas, the second half of Bereshis is not so much the Torah of Avram and Yitzchak anymore. It's really the Torah of Shem Ve'ever being expressed through Yaakov and Yosef. Because clearly, if you have to talk about the most important people in Bereshis, the three most important people in Bereshis are Avram, Yaakov, and Yosef. It's not Yitzchak. As painful as it is to say, last week we defended Yitzchak Avinu. We spoke about the chashivas of Yitzchak Avinu, not to minimize, God forbid. But there's the Torah of Avram, that's the beginning. But then the second half of Bereshis is really the Torah of Shem Ve'ever as it was lived and as it was taught by Yaakov and Yosef. And here we are. We're here in Golus. We're hopefully coming to the end of Golus. And we have to make sure that we study these parashas well. We remember these lessons of Yaakov Avinu well. Shkoach. Shkoach for coming out. Shkoach for joining us.